Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Pleased to have economist Rebecca Ryan with us on the show today. She's an author, entrepreneur, specializes in workforce strategies, and we're going to talk with her about how employers can support and retain women in the workforce. Maybe you're one of the millions of women who left the workforce since March of 2020, wondering what can employees do to bring you back or keep you as working from home maybe become essential for you. I hope you'll join in the conversation. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or send us an email, email address ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Rebecca Ryan, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
What a pleasure to be with you, Larry.
Well, I'm glad to have you here. And maybe you can set the stage for us. Why are women leaving the workforce in such huge numbers?
You know, I looked this up right before I jumped on with you. And the last time we had this few women in the workforce overall. So right now there are 55.9 million women in the workforce. And the last time we had this few women was 1987.
Wow. Oh, man. Why?
Well, I think some of this is very well documented, and especially for any women listening to this right now, if you had school-age children during the pandemic and you had to choose between your job and your kids, you chose your kids. But there are some women who have been disproportionately affected, and those are Black women, Latinx women. And some people are saying that management and women who are at the, like, in director and leadership positions have also been disproportionately affected.
Hmm. I've often thought about wage discrepancies, you know, and that problem's been around for pay inequities, I think, for decades at least. What the heck's stopping these problems from being solved?
You know, I do think that employers are really starting to get the memo. We have seen some really big moves in the last couple of months. So September, some people called September, October, Striketober. You know, we had the John Deere walkout. We had the Kellogg's walkout, Kaiser Permanente. I mean, a lot of people are rethinking this employer-employee relationship. And what's interesting to me, Larry, is that if you look back over history, after World War One, again, after World War II, when there were big disruptions to the labor force, workers came out and really fought for their rights. You know, they realized that they had carried the brunt of the disruption and the stress and the tension. And they said, you know, we deserve better. And employers have been willing to negotiate. The employer-employee contract was renegotiated. And I think that's happening again. And some of the new negotiations that are happening around alternative work arrangements or more flexible work have huge upsides for women and for working families.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to reason out why women are more burned out than men, but I imagine, I'm thinking, okay, child care typically falls more heavily on the woman in the household than it does on the man. That's probably the major reason, or?
I think there are three things. You hit on one of the three. So child care does fall more on women than men, and especially single parents, right? More women have custody of their children than men have custody of their children. But then think about the other end of the age spectrum, elderly parents. It's often women who have more of a role and play more of that nurturing role to get their parents or in-laws to their healthcare appointments and so forth.
Oh.
And so think of the pandemic's effect on our elders. You know, the number of people who have been in nursing homes or how, you know, people over 65 were far more likely to get COVID in the very early days. And so you can see how between having your kids at home and then having to care for elderly parents, there are two force factors from both ends of the generational continuum. And then the third thing is there's been talk about the emotional labor of relationships. And this idea that women do a little bit more of the emotional labor in relationships. So women tend to be the people, like, if you're going to socialize, it's often the woman in the relationship who will be the initiator of those social relationships and so forth. So there's been, I think all three of these force factors have just compressed onto women, and something had to give, and it was work.
Yeah. And I'm trying to think, well, how are we going to deal with this? I mean, I can see, I think about childcare, I think about elderly parents and the social, emotional side of it. I mean, I can think of ways maybe of helping that out somewhat, especially if the men can pick up the slack more. That's probably the first way that this could be alleviated a bit. But what are your thoughts?
I mean, you're pointing at one of the places, right? The household at home. Yeah. You know, how could there be more equity? But then if you think about the next layer out from that, the next workplace. Level out from that. Okay. Yeah. The workplace, and then the community, and then, you know, maybe policy and so forth. So some of the things that, you know, in a way we sort of have a perfect storm here, because not only have more women left the workforce, taking us back down to those 1987 levels, but think about who runs childcare centers. That is a proportionately female dominated role. So we have more in Wisconsin, for example, 54% of our state's population is now living in what's called a childcare desert, meaning that there you have to drive quite a ways to be able to reach childcare. So you're in a sort of desert of sorts. And 9% of group childcare and 70% of family childcare programs have closed. This is according to the Wisconsin Early Childhood Association. So we've needed more childcare to get women back to work at the same time that more childcare centers have closed. So it's like a spiral that's not awesome, frankly.
Yeah, I'm actually involved with an early learning center help on a board there. And, oh, my goodness, the place could probably triple in size with the number of people who are on the wait list to get in. And there's physically not enough room and people, too. You need to have qualified people, obviously, who are trained and so forth. And it's really sad when we in fact, I'll be at a meeting tonight talking about this, but with the team. But I'm sorry that we've come to this kind of situation where we've lost so much of our child support. And it has created lots of stress on women. Well, actually, you were not afraid even to talk about your own. You had some burnout yourself, did you not? And
I did. You bet.
During the the recession of 2007 or 2008 or in there.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I don't have children, so in a way, you know, I think all of us have to be good allies and advocates for women who do have children. But, you know, burnout is real. And it did. It happened to me during the Great Recession. I'm a business owner, and I was trying to figure out how to keep all 10 of my employees employed when our, you know, our revenues were cut by about 90%. And it causes a lot of stress. It causes a lot of burnout. And I think that's one of the other things that is going to be a long tail from the recession. So think about, we've lost 34 years of growth of women in the workplace. We've lost all that in the last 2 years since the pandemic. Now we have increasing depression, mental health problems. The WHO has said that this mental health crisis, depression, anxiety, is going to be the long tail of the recession. It's going to take a while for people to get back to the place where they feel well, where they feel, you know, safe. And for them to come back to society as we know it. And so that's another sort of a structural issue. So we've talked about one structural issue, which is the childcare shortage. And then there's this other structural issue around well-being that, you know, mental health is still highly stigmatized. Mental health services aren't covered by all employers, you know, plans for their healthcare and so forth. So we're going to have to get that figured out as well.
Our guest today, Rebecca Ryan, economist, author, entrepreneur, talking about the support of women in the workplace. We're getting to that. We've starting to touch on it a little bit more here. We've been setting the stage a bit. But I hope you'll join in with your own questions or comments. Women, are you burned out in your job? What are the barriers that exist to get back into the job market, or that would keep you in the job market? What things need to be done? I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Or you could email at ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. Well, let's move into some ways employers can support women in the workplace. Flexibility, I think you feel, needs to be on the top of business owners' minds.
Yeah, it's one of the things that has happened is that as people have felt more stressed about the pandemic and the knock-on effects, they have reassessed where work fits in their life, right? And where we used to be, you know, people make fun of Americans in a way that we're all workaholics. We live to work. You know, we don't work to live. And other countries maybe have a little bit more balance around that. So when you think about, okay, what can employers do? First of all, employers need to recognize that they may not be the most important thing in their employees' lives anymore. And they need to accept that. But you touched on this idea of flexibility. And I want to really be clear with the audience that flexibility doesn't mean everybody wants to work from home. In fact, a survey conducted over the summer of people who were still not back at work. So we've got people who've been unemployed, and then we've got millions of people who quit their jobs and just left. So all those people who are sitting out of the workforce right now, when asked, what would bring you back? The highest percentage, 86%, said flexibility, but only 32% said work from home. And what that indicates to me is that employees want flexibility. And I'll give you an example.
Yeah, I need one.
Yeah. So say that a nurse is not feeling well, right? But she's already been home for 2 or 3 days sick, and she cannot have another unexcused absence, or she'll be put on probation or potentially lose her job, right? This actually happened to a dear friend of mine, right? So she said she was not feeling well. And she said, and her colleagues were like, go home. Obviously, you're not feeling well. They were concerned she may have had COVID. Go home. You're not feeling well. She said, I can't have another unexcused absence or I will be fired and I need to keep this job. There are a lot of workers in that exact same situation where there are strict rules around, you know, 3 absences and you're out. Workplaces, employers are going to have to be far more flexible around this in the future, because if the choice is between keeping a worker for the long term and allowing a few more days of unexcused absence versus having a 3 strikes and you're out policy, and then it's going to take you 6 months or 8 months to find a replacement worker, I think a little near-term flexibility is going to be better for the worker and for the employer than just having the worker saying, I'm sick of it. I'm out of here.
Yeah. And I'm also thinking that 6-8 months of training people and not as productive, perhaps in those early stages. Lots to think about there. Rebecca Ryan, economist, our guest today. Great to have her with us as we talk about supporting women in the workplace. Again, you can join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Trina LaSousa is our engineer today. Mackenzie Crummy, our engineer, our on-air producer, I'm sorry. And you, my friends, are listening to the Ideas Network. So, are you burned out in your job? What are some of the barriers that exist that block you and maybe other family members or friends from climbing the corporate ladder? We can talk about that, too. How have you overcome sexism or gender discrimination in your workplace? What advice do you have to fellow women about professional growth and development? Do you feel supported by your employer? I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. You can email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org. So when you're talking about flexibility and there's a hybrid kind of thing, those are sort of different, aren't they, Abed?
Yeah, they are. I think the distinction is, so the traditional work from office, where you're showing up at a workplace every single day, then there's the hybrid model, where you're sometimes in an office and you're sometimes at home. And then there's the full remote work, where you rarely go into an office. You may live on the other side of the world or in a different country than the team that you primarily work with. And what we're talking about here, when we talk about this 86% of Americans who are not in the workforce right now saying they want flexibility, I don't even know that they're talking about hybrid, where they work from home sometimes and work in an office. I think they just want consideration. You know, life happens. I think about my sister. Her child has been in preschool for the first time. Yay, Oliver. Right? And so that started in, what, September, Labor Day? He's been home for 3 different weeks because there's been a case of COVID in his preschool. And so the whole class gets sent home. Now, my sister could not predict when those weeks would be. She did not have childcare lined up for those weeks because he's now, you know, in preschool. So he doesn't go to childcare anymore. And she had to completely upend her work. Now, luckily, she has a remote work job. She works from home every day. But when you have a 4-year-old underfoot, trying to think about getting anything done because this guy's not taking naps anymore, you know.
Yeah,
so
for sure.
It was really affecting her. So the flexible work that we're talking about is one piece of it. And I do want to say, like, there are some great employers in the state of Wisconsin who are figuring out how to offer on-site childcare. So this would be for kids who aren't yet in school, but some of these on-site childcare also offer after-school programs. Because listen, the school day ends at 3 and mom and dad work until 5 or 6. There's after school, you know, some assessment or enrichment that can happen. But they're also great for those occasions when, you know, you just unexpectedly your kid is home because somebody in their class had COVID, even though your kid doesn't have COVID. So we know, for example, that up in Manitowoc, the Wisconsin Aluminum Foundry. So this is a foundry. This is a blue collar job. They offer a $400 tax credit per month for working families who want to pay for childcare because it's expensive.
Yeah.
And they have an on-site childcare center. And everybody should check it out. It's kind of well documented, but it came from the CEO having an interaction with a single parent in the parking lot and realizing how much time was spent shuttling children back and forth between childcare and then the worker has to come to work and then they go home. And he thought, man, we could probably solve for some of our labor shortage if we were able to do this for our employees.
And I'll bet that helped a lot.
Yeah. He said that, I'm trying to read some of the outcomes of this, but he said it is expensive for them as well, but they say that it's going to increase retention. It's increasing peace of mind for parents, especially single parents, because how great that if you want to visit your kid, you can just stop in at break or at your lunch hour, you know? So there are a lot of wins in this.
Let's take some calls. Mia in Wauwatosa will give you a chance. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, yeah, thanks for taking my call. speaking more about flexibility, I was working full-time as an attorney when my husband was finishing medical school, and once he started his residency, first of all, his residency program was not at all flexible. So I knew we had a daughter, and I knew all child care responsibilities would be falling on me, and my firm was willing to let me go down to 60% part-time, but they would not allow me to have set days that I was working and set days that I wasn't. And for that reason, I was unable to get childcare because I didn't know when I would need it. Yeah. And I had to leave my job.
Have you found a new job where that kind of situation fits for you, Mia?
So I took about 2 years off, and now I am working on, I just accepted a job where I'm going to be able to have more reliable hours in childcare.
I'm glad for you for that. Rebecca, comment?
You know, my guess would be, and I know that I'm generalizing here, but my guess would be that that policy that you can go to 60% part-time, but you can't have set days, that wasn't a policy that was guided by women partners with children or by a group of working moms inside the firm. You know, I used to do a lot of work in public accounting. And what we found in those top 200 firms were that it was really difficult to help folks understand the needs of families because most of the partners were men whose wives did not work. So they didn't have the childcare considerations that, you know, all of that work fell to their wives. So one of the things we know, I mean, this to me is one of the real losses of the pandemic when you think about all the women who have dropped out of the workplace is we know that when women are leading teams, when women are partners in law firms, when women are, you know, the chief medical officers at hospitals and within health systems, when women are in leadership roles, we do a much better job around diversity, equity, and inclusion. We do a much better job of understanding the needs of families. And by the way, that helps dads too. It doesn't just help moms. And we generally have better returns, whether that's financial returns in a for-profit company or quality of care, measures in a healthcare environment. And that's one of the bigger, longer-term losses, I think, of having all of these women leaving the workforce is we don't have the value of their influence on setting policy.
Mia, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Abby wrote in by email and has been a stay-at-home mom for 6 years. She said that last year she would have gotten back into the working outside the home if it hadn't have been for the pandemic. She has felt the emotional toll and the pull to be, at the same time, the pull to be there with her children. So now she's substitute teaching.
First of all, Abby, you are not alone, even though I'm sure that you felt alone for a lot of this pandemic because we were all quarantining. So I hope you had a group of other moms or family around you who could remind you of what a superhero you are. And, you know, this notion that for Abby to come back as a substitute teacher, this is also kind of tied to what's happened during the pandemic. We've had a record number of teachers leave, and it's been harder to find substitute teachers, right? So I don't know how Abby found out about the substitute teaching job, but we've seen all manner of things from putting notes in kids' lunch boxes to, substitute teachers, bus drivers, just getting our kids back to school in light of shrinking human resources has been a real challenge. And I hope, Abby, that you're enjoying your position and that you continue to, you know, find success in the way that matters for you.
Yeah. Abby, thanks so much for that email. You can join in too. You could email like Abby at ideas@wpr.org, or we'd love to have you phone in, too. The number 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. I want to go back to that working at home business, because I've heard, you know, I've heard reports, employers and managers, even politicians say that, well, when people work from home, they're not going to be as productive. But what does the research show on productivity and working from home?
Working from home saved our economy during the pandemic. It's really interesting, Larry, because I've been studying workplace dynamics for over 20 years. And for half of those, at least half of those, more people, younger people, moms, parents of young children have wanted more workplace flexibility. And we're often told, that's not possible. Like, if we can't see you, how do we know you're working? Oh, we can't possibly make the technology work to enable that. But then look what happened during the pandemic. Within a week or 2 weeks, we had completely transitioned to working from home, and workers proved that they could be as, and in some cases, more productive than when they were in the office. So the toothpaste is out of the tube with respect to that argument. You know, workers have proven that they can be productive given the tools. And I think part of that is because one of the things that workers value is autonomy. You know, autonomy, mm-hmm. like being able to do their best at the speed and at the rate that like makes sense for them. And work from home has given people more autonomy. And importantly, as we've talked already, flexibility, a little more flexibility and less time in the car commuting. Or as somebody said to me recently, I don't have to steam all of my clothes every morning. It saves me so much time.
Well, I'm thinking back to that March of 2020 when I had to switch from teaching in person to teaching online in 1 week. And I, like a lot of other people, I'm like pretty much everybody else, we figured out a way to do it and figured out a way that I could do my radio show from my home for quite a long, long time, and for producers to be in other cities, handling phone calls and everything else. And there's a situation like that. I mean, if there was anything, you can say anything at all good about the COVID, it demonstrated, number one, that we can have a lot of ingenuity and we can learn. We can learn new things, and we can adjust. And there still needs to be adjustment, as we're finding out as we talk with you, Rebecca, when it comes to the workplace. But we can do it. I'm convinced. Stella in Sturgeon Bay, let's go to you. Thank you for calling.
Thank you very much. I'm calling about your Rebecca. Is it your guest?
Yes.
Rebecca, I'm guessing that you misspoke when you talked about the foundry that is implementing on-site childcare. When you began that commenting about that, you said they're offering a $400 tax credit and on-site childcare. They're setting up on-site childcare. Did you misspeak? I don't think that businesses can offer tax credits.
Yeah, I did misspeak. This company reimburses employees $400 per month for childcare expenses.
Okay, so that's the way it works. And there are opportunities to do pre-tax, at least in some situations, I know for sure. There are opportunities to do for an employee, let's say, to have $400 a month, let's put it that way, taken out toward health care or whatever it might be for, and then not have to pay the tax on that because it's going directly to health care. So I think that is a possibility. I'm not sure. It may only relate to health care. I don't know. I'm not sure on that. But thank you, Stella, for that comment. Michael in Appleton, we'll go to you. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. Hi, thanks so much for taking my call. I'm going to preface this by saying I know it's going to make people sad, and it's okay, and I appreciate any condolences. I am a father of a girl. She's now a teenager. I'm a single father in that her mother died in a car accident when she was very young, when she was just about three. So I've had sort of a bit of a unique perspective, you know, raising her. I already was taking care of her half time when it happened, but going from half time to full time parent and only parent is, you know, a bit different. So I may have a bit of a different perspective, but what Rebecca, what you were saying earlier about the historical workers' rights movements, I also am a history and anthropology major with a big interest in workers' rights and labor rights. And it's absolutely true. It, you know, there was early on, there were the big industrialists who were working people 6 days a week, 18-hour days, 12-hour, 14, 16-hour shifts, working, you know, making children work. And it's not until you get these really big upswells of changes in public opinion that are generally sparked by cultural events or societal events like a pandemic, like Spanish flu, like a world war, that people realize, wait a second, it doesn't have to be this way. And I guess I'm just calling to say that I really hope that the workers, that the worker working class takes this opportunity to say, we deserve more. We deserve health care. We deserve a living wage. We deserve flexibility in our schedules. There's no reason inherently that things have to be run the way they're being run, where everything is about maximizing profit.
Yeah. You're right about that, Michael. I believe Rebecca, maybe perhaps you should comment on Michael's comments.
Yeah. I mean, he's got the benefit of that history, right? He knows his history around this. And I think we're starting to see it. If he's still on the line, I would be interested in, like, for Michael, what would have been the most helpful policy, whether it's a workplace policy or a federal policy, that would have helped him as a single parent? You know, I mean, his daughter is probably driving now. She's a teenager, so he's probably doing less of the shuttling around. But I wonder what he would have looked for in a renegotiated commitment from an employer.
We may have lost Michael. I think we did. We lost Michael.
Okay.
But I appreciate your comments and your call, Michael, very much. Well, let's turn to Mary in Madison, find out what's on her mind. Hi, Mary.
Hi there. You know, I think this is even a bigger thing that I've heard any of the discussion around in this program today, because it's all about employers providing flexibility and benefits and things to make it more humane for people to be in the workforce, especially if they have small children. But what we're not talking about here is a larger thing in this society of people want it. They want it when they want it now. They don't want to be inconvenienced. And for a lot of these employers, especially smaller ones, providing that flexibility, especially at the last minute. I mean, you mentioned that nurse. Well, somebody wasn't going to get care that day then, you know, or something, you know, that organization was going to struggle with filling in at the last minute for that person. Not that she didn't deserve that time off, but what I'm saying is people have to be willing to be inconvenienced. And so if you scheduled a car repair appointment a week ago and you get a call that morning from the car repair business and say, I'm sorry, we can't do your car today because my mechanic had to stay home with a sick kid, like, you know, you got to roll with that then. And people don't want to do that. And ironically, what I have found is that assertion of inconvenience and privilege often comes from really progressive, liberal-minded folks who think they support all this stuff. But when they're on the down-end stream of an employer needing to be flexible, they don't like it. And they're pretty unpleasant with the people, you know, that are trying to help them and deal with it.
Well, that's a great comment, Mary. Rebecca, a comment?
I love that Mary has raised this, because one of the things that I feel like has happened is we've all gotten to be a little bit more of jerks during the pandemic. You know, that this whole, like Mary made such a good point, because I've seen it too, that people, you know, they walk up to the door of their favorite restaurant and it's not open on that day. There's not a sign saying why, and they huff off about, you know, I can't believe they're not open. Well, guess what? You know, like a lot of service businesses are having to drastically reduce hours. And, you know, I work in a small business, and if so, we're three people. If one of us is sick, that's a third of our workforce that's sick, right? In a hospital, if one person is sick, that might be one out of 125 or 1,000, right? So in a small business, the economies of scale can't be leveraged. So a little bit of patience and what we used to call COVID grace, you know, needs to be extended to folks. And I'd like to call on all of our better angels, but I do think that as the quits rate continues to get higher and higher, the number of people quitting their jobs, it's affecting more and more industries. And I think it's helping a lot of people become more sensitive to how the worker and employer dynamic is changing, and that everybody does need to be more flexible. So Mary, I'm 100% locking arms with you. Let's de-jerk or unjerk our responses.
And I can even think of myself a few times when I was upset or but not visibly, I don't think, but I thought, oh, why in the heck can't I have this or do that? And I've really tried to turn that around and think about what you're talking about here. And it helps me a little bit when I remember that these are all people that are working hard and trying to do their jobs as well as they can. Bruce in Partyville, what's on your mind?
Well, really two comments. One of the things that I've witnessed over my career and have missed it during the pandemic days is what I'm going to call spontaneous activity, that value of...
Oh, we completely lost you, Bruce. Oh, that is too bad, because I don't know what the spontaneous was that he was going to say.
I have a sense of what it might have been.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. So one of the sources that I follow, and if you have any nerds listening today, LinkedIn has an amazing chief economist named Karen Cambrow, and she releases data regularly about like what they're, you know, LinkedIn is on the front lines of people leaving jobs, finding jobs, and so forth. And one of the things that she's talked about is the value of returning to an office. And maybe this is what Bruce is getting at, is that, you know, when you're in an office, there are more of those like spontaneous interactions that you can spark off of each other. And for better or for worse, we don't design our Zoom meetings or our remote meetings in that way. There's no like chit chat donut talk at the beginning. It's like the meeting starts at 8 and we just start the meeting. And the spontaneity is one of the reasons that a lot of people want to get back to an office at least sometimes.
Yep. I can relate to that as well. Any last advice for employers looking to support women in the workplace, Rebecca?
Yeah. Well, employers, you can do two things. One is you can advocate with your elected representatives. There are a lot of issues in the infrastructure bills that are targeted at working families. So that's one thing that employers can do. But the second thing you can do is genuinely try to help your employees claw back some of their mental and physical health. Because if we don't create the environment for people to be able to claw back some of their mental and physical health, they will leave. That's why we're seeing such high quits rates. They're not going to be out for a year or 2 years, but they're going to take 3 or 6 months out. And as we discussed earlier, Larry, you know, better that you give a little bit now, you bend so that you don't break your employees. So a little bit of grace.
Rebecca, it's a pleasure talking with you. I hope we can do this again. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Rebecca Ryan, economist, author, entrepreneur, decades of experience working on workforce and economic strategies. It was great to have her with us today. We're going to switch gears. quite a bit, as a matter of fact, and talk with you about shipwrecks. There's a new film that's coming out. David Hestad is the producer of it, and we're going to be talking about that film that has to do with the 700 shipwrecks at the bottom of Wisconsin's Great Lakes. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network.